He said, I don't want you to do anything. You will be incapable of hiring really good people until you understand the brand from the inside out. Never forgot that. That's just how that conversation went, right? And so I went and spent time with the field marketing managers and really understood that brand.
Hello, and welcome to the Talent Acquisition Leaders Podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Dull. And on this show, we interview today's industry leaders in talent acquisition to discuss challenges, best practices, and what the future holds. If you are working in talent acquisition and have always wanted to sit down with your peers at other companies to exchange ideas and learn, well, this show is the next best thing. Join us each week as we bring you a new expert interview and extract their expertise. This episode is brought to you by SageMark HR. Transform your recruiting practices with leading-edge technology. Selecting the right recruiting solutions to enable your strategy is one of the biggest challenges leaders face today. You know technology will help, but searching all the options to find out what will work best for your specific needs can be both overwhelming and time-consuming. At SageMark HR, we make selecting the right recruiting technology easy. Our proven process has helped companies such as 3M, Comcast, Stryker, Walgreens, and many more. Reach out to us at SageMark HR for a free consultation to learn how we can help you improve results with less stress and confidently change from reacting to leading. Hello, and welcome to another episode of TA Leaders Podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Dull, and today I will have a really fun conversation for everyone with Mike Miller, Director of TA at Chipotle, otherwise known as the head TA dude. So, Mike, welcome to the show. Great to see you again.
It's good to see you too, Ryan. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
So let's start out, maybe just do a brief kind of introduction, starting with kind of your background. Tell your story, how you got into TA. Everyone has an interesting story on how they get into this profession. And it's never, no two are the same. So
you are correct. I think that I got into it. It was probably the end of the generation where, you know, people always say, oh, you know, I fell into HR. I fell into recruiting. So I suppose to a certain extent, initially, I did too, versus now I have team members who major in it and I love it. I love that there's programmatic aspects to it, right? I think it's really cool and really deserving and really appropriate. Look, I was an English major at UCLA. And while I really enjoyed the experience, I had no idea what I was going to do. I was still just happy that I got accepted anywhere. And so I'd roam around. And at that time, I would get bored of some of the morose conversations. How many times can we go through Merchant of Venice or whatever we're analyzing in Shakespeare? So I'd go hang out up on the North Campus with all of the playwrights and all of the theater kids. And so I thought, well, I'm going to write screenplays. That's what I'm going to do because I'm in Los Angeles, right? Yeah. And then I wrote a few and quickly realized that it actually took some level of talent above and beyond what I had. And so while I was at UCLA, I started recruiting for an SAT tutoring company. I actually started as one of the tutors and had a 73 Volkswagen Bug. And all the kids that could afford it lived up in the hills, and my car didn't like going up the hill. So the office said, you're late for all these appointments. We've got these kids paying whatever we're paying for the program. But why don't you come in the office and help us find other recruiters? And so I didn't know it was a thing. I knew what I did as a tutor, and I really enjoyed it. So I started, and this was it was kind of pre everything being online. And so you'd come in on a Monday morning, and this was in Marina Del Rey in California. And there was just a stack of applications that were faxed in, right? So you were having to read through and call. It was just like dialing for dollars. And then one day, one of the reps from the temp service says, so what are you doing here? They had a meeting with our managing director. And I said, well, I screen for tutors. Oh, you're a recruiter. Well, if I ever have recruiter roles open, should I call you? Sure. You know, I thought nothing of it at the time, right? And then a few weeks later, I said, okay, well, we have this client over in El Segundo, over by LAX, by the airport. And they're looking for like a junior recruiter. And I remember at the time it was $14 an hour, which I mean, I would have done anything. I'd like, oh my God, like I've made the big time. I will do anything for this money. And so that's what really started it off for me, understanding. And I was just fascinated when I walked in and there was this human resources department where all of these people behind the scenes making it all happen. And so what went from just a little bit of a whimsy or thinking I was screening recruiters turned into this awareness that it was something that someone like me was creative and had, you know, all the best intentions, you know, a lot of the competencies that people will walk in with versus the technical skills, perhaps, right? Where, you know, I had the communication skills, probably more than I do now, right? And I had the work ethic and the drive. And so it was just like, you know, mold me, polish me, which is very much, you know, what I try to do for my team members now. And so from there, did a little bit of a stint for one of the staffing firms. And I did all right, but I realized that probably, you know, wearing the suit and tie and, you know, I always have a lot of sympathy even now for people who call on me because it's a tough gig if you're doing it well and stay in that for more than about a year or so. But got to learn how to have, you know, how to navigate and have conversations with the C-level and how not to waste time and how hopefully to be a value add. And actually, a lot of the things and a lot of the work ethic that I have now came from that experience, which I, you know, I wouldn't want to relive, but it's not that it's a bad industry. It's just that it wasn't for me. Okay. And then from there, we're talking about probably 98, 99, 2000 in Los Angeles, and you had Idealab and a lot of startup funding. And I just thought, oh my God, the first thing I thought actually was, I don't have to wear a tie all day. That was a big winner for me. But then I, you know, walked into, they said, oh, you wait in this conference room. And then this guy walks in and happens to be the CEO. And then all of a sudden, before I'm even hired, I'm, you know, giving some thoughts on how to interview and what he should be doing. And I just, I love that flat dynamic, you know, where it's just brainstorming with everybody that walks in, right? And there's certainly some downsides to it because, you know, as you grow up as an organization, you need to have an actual product, right? A lot of the companies didn't have products. You had a lot of ideas. And you need to be able to put some enough framework. And this is a key that I've learned throughout my career, is the necessity of putting just enough framework in place as you grow so that it's not stifling, that it's not bureaucratic, but that it actually fosters and streamlines creativity. And that's something that I didn't know at the time, but I knew it went from being really fun to really chaotic, and we just couldn't seem to get things done.
I think that's a great point. And yeah, the startup world is really exciting. I chat with people in that space. It's really exciting, a lot of energy, but also a lot of chaos and a lot of people wearing a ton of hats. So oftentimes don't like structure, but some element of structure and discipline that doesn't stifle the creativity, like you said, but actually helps create efficiency in their business processes and get them to where they need to go can be really rewarding. So that's well said. How about after that? After the startup?
We started formalizing a little bit. So my current boss, who is pretty amazing, Marisa Andrada, who is our Chief Diversity, Inclusion, and People Officer, I actually met during one of those startup opportunities. And, you know, keep good relationships throughout your career. Because looking back, I would have, you know, never believed that we would be working together again at this point. You know, so I think one of the biggest tips that I give, certainly people on my team, I never want anybody to leave me, but I say, hey, if you do, and if it's the right thing, protect the reference, protect the relationship. And I'm really glad that I did, because then she connected me with a person who she'd worked with, I think at Universal Studios, actually. This individual who's, you know, really fantastic and who I'm still friends with, was the SVP of Human Resources over at Hot Topic. When Hot Topic was opening hundreds, and it comes in handy now, actually, I think about it often, opening, you know, hundreds of units per year. So that was, I went in as a contractor, you know, and again, I think, and maybe it's a little more fluid now, but sometimes people will think, it's almost like actors where I'll only do movies or I'll only do TV and the two shall never meet. Take opportunities that are culturally aligned to who you are. And I think opportunities where you can add something, you can get some work done, and you can also have leaders who can teach you. That's really sort of that magical triangle of success for me, is those three elements. And so I went in as a consultant, actually, for the first couple of months, just to clean some things up in recruiting land, and then realized that there were some, this team of this motley but wonderful crew of regional recruiters who really weren't reporting into anybody, but were going out every week. They would find a management staff from one of these new locations. And so they actually went to Jane, who was my boss, and said, you know what, we hear good things about this guy. We like him. And I think that was kind of a function of having just stellar listening skills and kind of that storyteller in me, really wanting to learn what they did and how they contributed. And I think they knew they needed a little bit of structure. And so they went and said, hey, can we report to him? And so Jane, and then the CEO was amazing at the time, a great mentor, and not in the warm, fuzzy way, but in that way that sometimes you need and that you appreciate years down the road. Betsy said, sure, take him. That's a good developmental. And so that one was very organic in that it just grew. And then they said, hey, why don't you take corporate TA, right? So then all of a sudden I had all of it while the organization was really growing and really thriving.
Great. So from Hot Topic, then...
And Marisa called me and said, hey, I landed at Red Bull, the energy drink, Red Bull North America in Santa Monica. And the appeal there was not only working with her again, because the startup opportunity was a little bit truncated in that you run out of funding if you don't sell a product. I learned this. I remember my dad telling me, he said, do you guys sell things? I said, well, not yet, you know, but we have these amazing catered lunches. He says, I may be old, but I don't know if this is the way we do business. And, you know, so he was right. You know, God rest his soul. However, Marisa called me and said, the conversation is usually start with, hey, dude, I've got a proposition. Like, all right, what's up? And so she said, their idea of recruitment is it's like the business cards that are stuck in the jackets from the staffing firms. There's nothing, you know, there is no process. There is no operations. There is no requisition. There is nothing, you know, so it's just a matter of calling. And then, you know, the agencies will just take advantage of those managers. So it's like 35%. Absolutely. Bring it on. And so that was, you know, Hot Topic was very much like, let's fine tune the, you know, machine and maybe put a turbocharger on it. And this was, let's build this thing. We have to find the parts. We have to procure the parts and put it all together. And so was really proud of that. And what that gave me was a sense that it's bigger than operations. You have to have your operations, your processes locked down. So I've always viewed that, and my team members who will be listening are going to know exactly what I'm going to say here, Ryan. But your free ticket, your fast pass to play in the other spaces is making sure you have your platforms are integrated, are connected, and your operations are seamless. Then let's look at your talent branding. Then let's look at your other pieces and make sure that foundation is really fortified. I think that's an important point. And so I learned, we reported into a wonderful guy named Dan Ginsberg, Red Bull. And the first day I went in to his office, first week rather, it was one of those really cool, like, you know, just the plexiglass. I used to think to myself, how do these guys get stuff done? Because I realized, oh, wait, they're not necessarily doing the spreadsheets, right? Like, you know, their job, you know, your job is to create vision and inspire. And so I'd walk in and I used to see this amazing desk. And then he had a refrigerator behind him with sugar-free and regular Red Bull. He took one out and took an empty glass and poured it in. And so there was the can and here's the glass. He said, what do you think? I said, I think it looks better in the can. Why? Well, because, you know, the brand. And on that, he goes, exactly. So he said, what's your job? I said, my job is to hire some really great people for you. He said, have you spent any time with our field marketing managers out in the field yet? I said, no. He said, I don't want you to do anything. You will be incapable of hiring really good people until you understand the brand from the inside out. Never forgot that. That's just how that conversation went, right? And so I went and spent time with the field marketing managers and really understood that brand and the people, right? Brands are people. Culture has to do with people and alignment and heart and hope and spirit. And that organization, I mean, it was incredible, you know, and I came back and then he said, all right, what did you learn? And I was just like full of information. He goes, okay, now you can start to find some people. And so that was really my first exposure. And even though I had been at Hot Topic, which was all about branding, you know, even to the extent that Betsy, a CEO, would always tell me, you know, what you need to do is you need to hire the, when you're interviewing accounting people, you need to take them into the coffin room. We have these themed rooms and make sure you blast Aussie. And if they can put up with that, they'll be able to fit in here, right? So there was an aspect of branding, but I really got, if not textbook, I think a very dynamic crash course, spending time at the events and understanding what was behind that brand. And also what comes in handy now is understanding what it means to have a brand that's a lifestyle extension. Understanding that your candidates are your guests, the guest experience and the candidate experience are interchangeable. They can help each other or they can hurt each other. So I learned a lot there, quite honestly.
So let's fast forward a little bit to Chipotle. You joined Chipotle. Talk to me a little bit about what it was like when you joined and maybe some things that you've built out since then.
Sure. So again, Marisa called me and I was entertaining another opportunity at that point. And I was contemplating my fate one day at the dog park in downtown Nashville. And she says, "Hey man, landed at Chipotle. I think I could use your help building out this team. By the way, I'm in Denver right now, but you know," and I wasn't really NDA'd at that point, "but you can come out next week. I can tell you more about what we're thinking." So I flew out to Denver the following week and realized that we were going to embark upon a transformation. So she was part of a new leadership team headed up by the amazing Brian Nickel, our CEO. The order was to, you know, reinvigorate the brand. And what I really loved about it was there, you know, Ryan, there was no landing in between, right? It wasn't a matter of either you kind of hire some people and it's all right, and if it doesn't totally work out, we just slot you in as a recruiter, right? I mean, it was either we were going to knock it out of the park or we weren't going to exist. I mean, I think that's where the business was. And I love that, you know, and of course, I mean, that trait between you and me probably works a little better professionally than personally, right? You know, I think you have to learn to balance the two. But it was an amazing opportunity. And it was also a chance for me to, it was like getting to do a show with all your greatest hits, because I had, you know, we were pulling together, the whole notion was, who are the best people we don't know? And who are some of the best people we have known? Because we're going to need that mind share and that horsepower to really make this happen. And so I went to Denver and spent a few days with the executive leadership team, otherwise known as our C-suite. And what really made an impression on me, sure, they were smart. Sure, there was strategy. Yes, yes. But the first thing was, who are you? Like, what do you do? Tell me about your family. Tell me about your life. You know, they really wanted to get a sense of who I was as a human being. And then we would talk about the business and talk about the challenge that was in front of us. And so I came home and my daughter said, "What do you think?" Because I think everybody who knows me, they would lock on to, you know, Red Bull and that opportunity. And it was, you know, very exciting. And I said, "This is going to be the best opportunity ever." And it had to do with the people, because the alignment that, you know, again, the intelligence was there, but there's a lot of organizations with a lot of really smart people in buildings or virtually. And that doesn't necessarily foster the kind of culture that can ignite a movement. I was convinced that I wanted nothing more at that point after that initial like enculturation moment. I was convinced that I wanted nothing more than to help them catalyze their vision through people. And again, there were no guarantees. And it wasn't so much nerve-wracking as it was focusing, because you couldn't miss anything. You couldn't miss anything. That is now known as our transformation. So the reorganization, the relocation, we really didn't have a lot of legacy people, Ryan, because if you've ever tried to, it's like in one of those things, like the recruiter, not so much joke, but the recruiter reality is, you know, places like a San Francisco, Denver, San Diego, people don't really, they don't want to leave. Where they are is more important. I think San Francisco is, you know, certainly starting to price itself out a little bit to the extent that the Californians will entertain a conversation about a Southern California opportunity. But still, Denver, we were in Denver for 25 years. People weren't going to leave. So we were then having to do this with comparatively little legacy knowledge, right? To add to the stakes even more. So it was a time.
So how did you set up the model? Was it more decentralized in geographies? Was it centralized and virtual? Or kind of like, how did you end up navigating those relocation challenges plus the explosive growth of Chipotle in the locations?
What we did, so the order of the day was, all right, we are going to move from Denver and have dual headquarters in Columbus, Ohio, where we had a small presence, like from a processing perspective, and then in Newport Beach, California. New markets to tap into, new energy. And, you know, obviously, Denver's a great town and a lot of history there and a lot of talent there. But it was a matter of just needing a reset and some refreshing elements. And so it was the right move. And so what we did was actually based recruiting out of Columbus, which is somewhat central, and then had some people on the ground in Newport Beach to make sure that there was some face time with those hiring managers, right, for the discovery calls, the intake calls, and just for hosting. And then we set up the field recruiting team, actually centralized, based out of Columbus, but aligned to geography. And it was, you know, a small but mighty team. We had about 35 people on the team before, and we were rolling this out with 12 people essentially. And it was interesting, you know, so we would have like these, you know, remote marketing strategists, and just a lot of positions where when I looked at it, it was a lot of gut level stuff. I would just look at it and say, I don't know what that role does, you know, and I didn't know the people, mind you. So it wasn't a judgment at all. There were some very talented people there that got us through the first 25 years. But I just thought, I want lean, I want scrappy, I want the best of startup, knowing we'd have to scale it quickly because we're a startup, but we're not. It's also, you know, a brand that at that point had about 2,500 restaurants and about 85,000 employees. Now we're at about, 2,900, looking to double in size with about 100,000 employees. And so you want to be very thoughtful about leveraging the best of the startup elements without diluting yourself into thinking that you can operate without the guidelines or framework that sometimes startups lack. So essentially, I wanted them close. And we worked in a war room together. That's the other thing is I chose to not take, sometimes I'll say, you guys never gave me an office as a joke. The reality is I took a hotel in space in one of the offices because I wanted the team to come in. I wanted to build that camaraderie as quickly as possible. I wanted to learn from them. They were probably a little bit more savvy from a social perspective. And then I think from a navigating the operations perspective, I was able to help. And I knew if we were literally sitting in a room together or they were free to come in, that we would learn more than if I had, you know, the open door office, which oftentimes is an open door at all.
So you set that kind of foundation and delivery model and the structure and then set off on essentially, you know, doubling the size or whatever the delivery that you're doing. So now fast forward to now, talk a little bit maybe about the key initiatives that you see over the next year or two, like where are you taking the team and your initiatives from here forward?
I'm an optimistic deconstructionist. So what I learned, what I've learned in the last, 18 months, you know how we've all learned a lot against, you know, the pandemic backdrop, you know, quite honestly, a lot of the, you know, the best practices that, you know, many of us who've been doing this for a while held true to, we needed to take a dynamite stick to because they weren't going to see us through any longer. And so never did I think at my age that I'd be as invigorated about what comes next than I am because it's new. I can't say general themes, leadership principles, best practices of how a business runs and treats its customers and operates and builds culture. Sure, I can say, hey, here are some things that I knew from my past. However, here, what's really served us well is that we're very tethered to our values and very committed to our purpose of cultivating a better world. And so it's something that we will nerd out about one-on-one in group settings, whatever it is. It's not just, hey, you read it on the door walking in and no one ever actually talks about it. And so what comes next, I'm actually really excited about. And again, it's uncharted territory for me. I looked at this great, we've all been navigating this great reset, the great resignation. I've become, and savvy is probably giving myself a little bit too much credit, but I've become cognizant and fluid with programmatic advertising, with just the elements that are necessary to pull applications and generate interest weekly. And it costs more to do it every week, and it's a smaller candidate pool. So then I thought to myself, well, hang on, we've got this really robust suite of benefits and a very compelling employee value proposition. You know, we can take somebody who has lots of competencies and is a young person and may not have a degree. And in all honesty, 2 or 3 years down the road, you're earning six figures running a $2.5 million restaurant, right? And that's not just, you know, right? It's not like the bait and switch with, you know, the car sales ads, right? That's many people in the organization thriving like that. So I thought, well, debt-free degrees. Okay. Do I really, what happened was actually, you know, I'm acting as though I just came up with this. So I walked into one of the restaurants and got the virtual high five and the tears from this one team member who was saying, oh my God, thank you so much for the debt-free degree because now I'm going to go be an app developer somewhere else. And I'm leaving. I'm like, wait a minute, we need app developers. Like, what do you mean you're leaving, right? So if there's ROI for you, there has to be some ROI for us too, because you're part of our culture, right? This is, you know, everything we do, we're a service bureau from a HQ perspective for these just amazing team members, chapeeps, as we call them, who we have in our restaurants. And so if they want to do something other than work in one of the restaurants and get a degree in IT and app development, information technology, we have those roles. Supply chain, we have those roles. So what I really want to transition to, and I suppose reinvent, or maybe the evolution of where we are by necessity of the landscape that we're navigating in, is like really build out talent production. So we're all riffing on each other from, a talent acquisition perspective. And at a certain point, it comes down to who spends more and how long can you keep people?
Right.
Why don't we take people who have already been with us and are sensing and feel a sense of engagement and loyalty because we've taken care of them and their families, whether it's, you know, our mental health and mental wellness, mental fitness benefits, right? I mean, we just have these amazing benefits. Let's take people that already understand that, take time to get a degree, roll them into the system. There's no ceiling. There's no firewall between the restaurants. And, you know, perhaps there's fewer opportunities, right? But there's no real firewall between the opportunities in the restaurants and our desire to welcome you to a headquarters opportunity. So let's be a little bit smarter. So I envision a future where we have recruiters who are coaches, you know, who are making sure that there's visibility to those opportunities and that we're working you in, working you through and continuing to develop you and keeping you.
I love it. That's fantastic. That is a great model, a great initiative. As you talked before, the, you know, the process and technology and kind of the operational aspects that enable that transformation are no small task, but getting those right to be able to execute on that is fantastic for your organization, for all those that are a part of the organization and enable like unlimited career growth for folks. So I think that is a great initiative. So thanks for sharing that.
Absolutely. You know, we have a vision for people, which is to create an environment where people can thrive and pursue their passions. And part, and I've certainly been able to do that for the first time in my career. Not really a different version of me personally or professionally. The topics we talk about may be different, but I've really been able to bring my full self, and I want that for others. And I especially want that for people who haven't worked, don't have years of experience, right? 18, yeah. 19, 20, and you've got everything that's happening right now. And then all of a sudden, you know, relatives are moving in and you're having to support households in some cases. How do we support you?
That's great. And yeah, we've all had to reinvent ourselves to some extent. I mean, you and I both have been in this space for greater than 20 years. And it's the, like, this is the craziest time in the spot that we've ever seen. And what we've grown up doing and building doesn't work anymore. And you have to do things differently in order to succeed and serve those who you serve. And so it's a unique time for sure. And you have to be nimble to be successful. So
what do you keep? There's pieces that you keep, right? I mean, like, I think your integrity, right? You know, some of the reps, and I always think, like, I can't necessarily define someone else's success for them, but I can certainly save you time. You know, here are mistakes that I made in my 20s or the first 5 or 10 years of my career. So just navigating relationships, building relationships, understanding how to align your week to your values. One of our values is the movement is real. One is authenticity lives here. And I've stayed just completely locked and aligned over the last year and a half, or coming up on 2 years too. So some of what we did worked. I think it's just the dynamics, the strategies, some of the tools, how we integrate them, you know, getting into your area of expertise is where we're going to have to stay open and not stay too rigid and locked to the past.
Yeah, I mean, that space is evolving so rapidly and so much M&A activity and capability increasing and investment. And it is a very, very dynamic ecosystem and tough to navigate. Like, what was real 12 months ago is not real today in that space.
So, that's exactly right. And so I think, you know, one of the things that I've really learned this year, quite honestly, I have, you know, no problem brainstorming and no problem, you know, dipping into creative solutions. And as, you know, as my boss will always say, what are you solving for? That's a great idea. What are you solving for? How can we, if I were, you know, to impart upon your listeners, you know, who are trying to navigate, we're all trying to navigate these times, these precarious, unprecedented times, be really crisp and really clear before you start jumping, like I tend to do, to solutioning or some kind of crazy idea that nobody else has tried yet. What are you solving for? And does it fit the overall objective? Are we working in alignment? So that's really been a primary filter for me this year. And it served me well, I think. And it served the team well.
I'm sure it has. And I see it all the time. I work with a lot of organizations, helping them identify the right technology for their specific needs. There's a lot of marketing that makes these solutions generally applicable to all situations. But reality is, it takes a very specific model and systematic approach to identify the right solutions for specific needs. Those who just kind of get enamored by shiny objects and buy based on recommendations or face value generally tend to make mistakes and get disappointed. And so being deliberate, being really focused on what am I trying to solve for? What are the requirements to make something successful in our organization? How does it align with everything else we're doing? is a really, really good advice for the audience and for others, because I agree that that helps make things successful, because mistakes in that area are super costly.
Super costly, embarrassing, things that should be wins for the organization and hopefully PR wins for people on your team, you know, can fall by the wayside. Ask above you, ask below you, right? Ask key partners, ask coordinators on your team. Oftentimes, those reporting into you have some of the best insight. And yep. then when you're, and the other thing is, you know, I used to have this notion that, oh, if it's a demo, right, and I have the subject matter expertise, you know, keep in mind, look, there's a lot of great people out there, but they're also trying to sell you generally an enterprise solution. Do you necessarily need that? You know, so don't be afraid to slow things down. And, you know, I'll oftentimes say, hey, look, I'm not the brightest, so let's do this again. How is this going to fit? So it's your time, it's your investment, and ultimately you'll be able to, you know, kind of claim that prize or run point on a successful project. So don't be afraid to slow it down and make sure that you really have the awareness of how the pieces will fit, how the platforms, how they will integrate, whether they're scalable. Ask a lot of exploratory questions.
That's great advice. You've done an excellent job sprinkling in all your advice through this process. I usually ask about advice, and you've done a ton of that. So last question being, anything else that you see for the future of the function of recruiting, either at Chipotle, you talked a little bit about where you're going with your function. How about for the future of recruiting? What do you see evolving as we look to the next several years?
Here is my take. I don't want to pretend that I'm, you know, speaking for a lot of intelligent people listening, because you need to solve for your own organization. But this is somewhat generalized, I think, in that understand the ROI. We're talking about it a little bit differently earlier. But right now, we need to sell candidates on why they should invest with us. If people are literally at the point where they're saying, I'm cool being a little broke and sitting home on the couch, and I'm not sure if it's safe to, you know, on and on and on, then they need to understand why there is value in taking what for them is a bit of a risk in getting off the couch and re-entering the workplace. And here's the thing that I really understand now. It's not just the paycheck. It is the paycheck. Don't get me wrong. We all need to earn money and know that there's some potential. People need to know that they're taken care of right now. One of the things that we've been able to lean into rather heavily is the fact that I think overall we did a really good job putting our people first and foremost and taking care of them and their families throughout the pandemic. So I can say, hey, look, I think the mark of an organization moving forward is looking past over the last couple of years and seeing how we cared for our people when we had no playbook to rely on, right? So was there integrity? Did we lean in? Did we honor our values? You know, were we sufficiently sensitive yet encouraging and developmental? And I think that we did many of those things well. So now we need to pivot it and say, look, here is the value for you. Like, allow us to sell you on why we think this is a good investment. And so those who were successful in, you know, 18 and 19 and pre-pandemic, who probably were used to having healthy application flow, no shortage of candidates, right? Make sure that you have an elevator pitch, an honest one. But, you know, I say that to the extent that you probably have 30 seconds, 45 seconds, a minute. So look through, pretend you don't work for the organization. Take a look at your career site. Take a look at your social. See how people experience your organization and make sure that it succinctly and effectively captures the hard work that you and your teams are putting in, and make sure that it's pretty seamless. You know, understanding that 18, 19, 20-year-olds, right, they're going to be on Instagram, on TikTok. So make sure that you're not asking them to spend 3 minutes reading a job description. Go where the energy is. Go where the energy of the audience is. And never disrespect that. It's always the things that the cornerstones remain the cornerstones, right? As far as integrity and growth and culture and opportunity. But the entry point to those things changes as social changes, as times change. So change with them.
I think that's great advice, great vision, because especially for that group of individuals, the expectations around user interface and experience for just about anything that they purchase or engage with, it has to be frictionless, easy, simple, quick. You can't have the traditional clunky latency periods of recruiting process of old. It won't work. There won't be the conversion rates that you need. So I think that is dead on. I love it. Mike, thanks so much for joining today.
You.
Really, really appreciate you. Appreciate the conversation. So thank you.
Oh, likewise. Thank you so much for having me.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Talent Acquisition Leaders Podcast. If something we said today resonated with you, please subscribe, rate, and download our podcast and share the episode with your network. Ready to transform your recruiting practices with leading-edge technology just like our other clients at 3M, Comcast, Stryker, and Walgreens? Then reach out at sagemarkhr.com for a free consultation.